The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, the Iran war is putting further strain on transatlantic relations. German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier has now spoken of a deep rift with the United States. In unusually strong comments, he said that there will be no going back to before January 20th, 2025, when Donald Trump began his second term as president. And he slammed the U.S. administration for starting the war against Iran. Here's some of what he had to say.
Our foreign policy does not become more convincing simply because we refuse to call a violation of international law a violation of international law. We had to grapple with this during the Gaza war, and we must grapple with it in the Iran war as well. For, in my view, this war is a violation of international law. There is little doubt that, in any case, the justification of an imminent attack on the US does not hold water. This view also appears to be held by some within the U.S. intelligence community. This war is also, please forgive me for saying so as someone directly involved, a politically disastrous mistake. And that's what frustrates me the most, a truly avoidable, unnecessary war, if its goal was to stop Iran from developing a nuclear bomb.
So that has failed, hope, but what are the Germans doing? Behind the scenes, how are they preparing?
Well, I mean, Germany has issued a blank check to defense spending. That's what the Germans are doing. They are trying to organize, and I stress trying to organize, a bolstering in European capabilities.
I do believe that Donald Trump is accelerating a lot of things that European policymakers and Germany has been aware of for the past two decades.
There you go. Lots to unpack. Germany, I mean, all their leaders are a little bit all over the place with respect to the Iran war. And the president, Steinmeier, I guess it is, he's got a little more liberty to be outspoken. But there he is, accusing America of violating international law. Never one to accuse Iran of violating international law. But the standards that they hold the U.S. to, and then little Israel as well, really unbelievable. But here again, the other themes we've been talking about a lot on this show. Any excuse for what is Germany doing? Well, the relationship is severing between Germany and the United States, and some of them don't agree with the war effort over Iran. And what's Germany doing? Well, Germany has unlimited defense spending at the moment. I mean, these are pretty significant developments. Certainly, if you understand anything about Bible prophecy. Thank you for joining us on today's show. I had a brain freeze there for a moment. This is the Trumpet Daily, is it not? It is the Trumpet Daily. It's a special Trumpet Daily. That's why I'm a little distracted, I suppose. Our beloved producer has put together a 17-minute segment. We have the tag team effort working today. I was going to miss class and focus on the program, but I went to class at the last minute, so not as much prep time for today's show. But the big news with respect to Iran is the 15-point peace plan. Of course, if it's an effort to make peace or to make a deal with the Islamic regime, that certainly isn't unconditional surrender, as President Trump was demanding just a couple weeks ago. So Mr. Livingston has put together a point-by-point update on that. We'll probably just reserve the final 17 minutes or so of the show and turn it over to that pre-recorded segment. We'll touch on some other things with respect to Iran as we proceed here in this first segment. But I want to focus, as you saw there from the cold open, I want to focus more on what's happening in Germany, because you're not going to get this anywhere else. anywhere else. This is a bit more commentary on what the German president said in criticizing President Trump and the United States. Clip two.
The German president did not mince his words in criticizing the Trump administration and the war. He called it illegal, avoidable, a disastrous mistake. What do you make of that coming from Germany's head of state?
I was at that speech, which was taking place at the foreign ministry, and I must say the people in attendance were quite surprised that he got so political about this topic, because you have to remember that Frank-Walter Steinmeier, the German president, is the head of state, but he's not the head of government. So he has a largely representative function, and, you know, it's not unheard of that he reminds especially the political parties in Germany of what they're supposed to do. But criticizing an ally like that, that is pretty unusual.
Criticism, more than that, it was a scathing attack, as this guy says. I mean, even those in attendance were surprised. The Al Monitor website says, our foreign policy does not, quoting Steinmeier, our foreign policy does not become more convincing just because we do not call a breach of international law a breach of international law. So here's the United States, the reckless United States, the gunslinging United States, violating all of this international law. If you go to the White House website, you can get a rundown of all that Iran has been doing for 47 years in its war against the United States, beginning in November of 1979. Iranian students backed by the regime. This is a partial list. Seized the U.S. embassy, taking 66 Americans hostage in a 444-day standoff. Over a year, they held them. Did this violate any international laws? Taking over the U.S. embassy, taking 66 Americans hostage. And then you go right down the list. The bomb in Beirut that killed 17 Americans, that's the U.S. embassy. Iran bombed the U.S. embassy. Why? Did that violate international law of some kind? Some kind of law certainly prohibits that. 1983. 241 U.S. military personnel bombed. That's at the Marine compound in Beirut. And that led to a disastrous withdrawal. March of 1984, Islamic Jihad, Iran-backed Islamic Jihad, kidnapped a CIA station chief, William Buckley, on his way to work in Beirut. September 1984, Iran-backed Hezbollah terrorists killed 23 innocent people, including two American service members, in a car bomb attack. June of 1985, Iran-backed Hezbollah terrorists hijacked TWA Flight 847 on its way from Athens to Rome, torturing a U.S. Navy diver before shooting him point-blank in the head and tossing his body onto the Beirut airport tarmac. Certainly that violated some kind of international law. Point-blank range. Suicide bomber in 1996, March of 1996, linked to the Iran-backed Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad terrorist groups, killed 20 people, including two Americans. Suicide bombing in Tel Aviv. There was, at the late 1990s, early 2000s, all those bus bombings and such in Jerusalem and in Israel. This list doesn't even go through all the IEDs, the explosive devices that Iran set up. Hundreds and hundreds of soldiers, U.S. soldiers, dying at the hands of Iranian terrorists. In some cases, I mean, directly, as they infiltrated Iraq and went looking for U.S. soldiers to murder. They've been at war with the United States for 47 years. January 2007, a dozen men affiliated with Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard, they killed five U.S. soldiers in Karbala, Iraq. They sneaked across the border and they posed as American soldiers. and then turned the guns on Americans. March 2007, former FBI agent Robert Livingston disappeared in Iran, likely dying in an Iranian prison. You go into Iran, and you, if you're American, you disappear. That's the way it works. International law, it doesn't apply so much to Iran, does it? At least Steinmeier doesn't bring it up. And who else does? Does anybody? Hey, here's Steinmeier saying that, look, to stop them from building a nuclear bomb, you don't want to start a war. I guess he's on the Witkoff bandwagon. Just make a deal with them. Just make a deal like the dear leader did. And then everybody's happy. Everybody's happy. We talked this week about the supposed mindset change or mind change that's happened in Iran. For the better. Yeah, did you know this? For the better. It's improving. Their love for America is growing. Well, the actual fruits tell another story. You mean if one of the rules on this so-called deal is lifting the sanctions, of course the mullahs are going to say, hey, sign us up. We want to make a deal. We'd like for the millions and millions of dollars to come flowing into our country again so we can make more ballistic missiles, so that we can commit more acts of terrorism. 2014, Iran-backed Hamas terrorists killed two American citizens serving in the IDF. 2019, Hezbollah terrorists killed an American civilian contractor and wounded several U.S. service members in a rocket attack at Kirkuk, Iraq. January 2020, you seeing a pattern here? 2020, 109 U.S. troops suffered traumatic brain injuries in an Iranian ballistic missile attack at another airbase in Iraq. Firing missiles at U.S. bases, just like they have in the last 3 weeks. U.S. intelligence indicated the Iranian regime was considering a plot to assassinate the U.S. ambassador to South Africa. And on it goes. 2022, an IRGC captain orchestrated the killing of an American citizen in Baghdad. 2023, Iranian drone attack killed an American contractor and wounded five U.S. service members and another contractor in a strike on a coalition base in Syria. Between October 2023 and November 2024, so over the course of about a year, Iran and its proxies conducted more than 180 attacks against U.S. forces in the Middle East, wounding more than 180 U.S. service members and killing three. Over the course of a year, this is a partial list. It's a partial list at the website, and I went down and pruned it even more. 180 attacks. And then this is icing on the cake as far as responding to Steinmeier goes. An Iranian national, an IRGC asset, was charged for plotting to assassinate President Trump. You can't make this up. I mean, it culminates in the assassination plot to take out Donald Trump. And then Donald Trump comes along 3 weeks ago and says, you know what? That's enough. That's enough, as I've been saying. You've got to give him some credit for doing what no other U.S. president was willing to do over the course of that whole timeline that I just went through very briefly, just covering some of the low spots. No one had the courage to stand. And as soon as someone stands up to it, well, then you get the self-righteous, pharisaical German leadership singling out Donald Trump as if he's the threat, as if he's guilty of violating all of these international laws, as an excuse, using it as an excuse to build more weapons. Oh, yes. This is an article by Brett Stevens. It's at the, I think he writes for the New York Times still. Never Trumpery. I mean, to come out and to actually compliment the war effort in Iran was not expecting that, but just to, again, make a point that he didn't make, he's basically talking about how well the war effort is going. It says, most Americans probably don't look back at March 2012, if they remember it at all, and think of terrifyingly high gas prices. It says, in the month when the Hunger Games ruled the box office and President Barack Obama was on his way to a comfortable reelection, the price of crude oil rose to $123 a barrel. That would be about $175 a barrel in today's dollars. I mean, that kind of blew my mind just reading it this morning. To think that just 2012, that's just 12 years ago, or I guess 14 years ago, and $123, it's actually $175. Look at how runaway inflation is killing us, among many other things as well. But leaving that aside, I mean, the cost for a barrel today is $100. In today's dollars, $100. In 2012, it was $175. It says that helps to, you know, put things in perspective. All the talking heads screaming about, this is just, it's destroying us, the cost of oil. President Trump's reckless, a reckless disregard for the economy. He goes through this long list of difficulties that America and Western nations have run into. I guess his focus is on America primarily, but as you would expect, the difficulties that you run into when you're engaged in war. It says here, that ought to provide some perspective on the panic over the war in the Middle East. To hear the critics' version of events, an unprovoked and unnecessary attack on Iran launched at Israel's behest, these are all the narratives, is this. There's a story recently, by the way, it was yesterday, the Saudi Arabia guy that is urging President Trump to finish the job in Iran. Yeah, that's right, Saudi Arabia. I mean, evidently they can do it. But if Israel even hints at encouraging President Trump to go and take care of the job or finish the job, well, then it's the Jewish conspiracy. Then it's the Jews who are behind it. That it's already a foreign policy fiasco and that it's put the global economy at risk without any clear objective or end game. You know, all the talking points, not just from the radical left, but across the board here in the States. But he quotes Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat, who on the weekend said, we've never seen this level of incompetence in war making in this country's history. Spoken like a true non-historian. In hindsight, the single biggest error of the Gulf War, this is further on in the piece, was to end it too soon before Saddam Hussein's forces were thoroughly routed. It says President Trump should not make the same mistake. This final bit, listen to this. Brett Stevens says, if past generations could see how well this war has gone compared with the ones they were compelled to fight at a frightening cost, they would marvel at their posterity's comparative good fortune. They would marvel, too, at our inability to appreciate the advantages that we now possess. I mean, this is all just another way of saying that we don't have the pride in our power to go in and finish the job. And now we're groveling before a regime that supposedly was obliterated, trying to make a 15-point deal? The power. I mean, even if we didn't send troops in, if we carried on with the bombing and with other ways to really tighten the screws on Iran, America could so easily bring the regime down. But it won't. It won't because, well, you're fighting another regime right here at home, always. Whether it's the media, the Democrat Party, or the Never Trumpers, whoever it is. And then, of course, the rules of war. You can't have one civilian casualty. Because then, I mean, then the international law, I mean, it gets more specific. So you fight with one hand behind your back. It's limited warfare, always. And now the desperate attempt to try to get out of it. Any deal is certainly not unconditional surrender. Imagine at the end of World War II, trying to come up with a 15-point plan or a deal made with the regime in Japan, for example. Well, if you do this, then we'll give you this. And if we do this for you, you've got to do this for us. No, it had to be unconditional surrender. And this time around, I mean, that's what we were told. And you're going up against forces like Steinmeier and others who, as I've said, just use this, hate Trump. Orange Hitler used that as an excuse to build your war machine. And there's coming a time when the German leadership, it's prophesied. There's coming a time when the German leadership, they're not going to care so much about international law when it comes to war, when it comes to making war. Steinmeier says, calling the war unnecessary and a politically disastrous mistake. Well, they're paraphrasing Steinmeier. It's all Trump's problem. But, you know, one thing, whether his statements rise to the level of Merz's recent criticism or not, still, one thing that all these German leaders agree upon, German business leaders too, industry, is, hey, let's build a war machine. Let's have, what is Germany doing in these times of turmoil? Well, you heard it in the clip. They've got unlimited defense spending. The Daily Wire says here, in a landmark deal that marries German engineering prowess with Israeli combat-proven technology, Volkswagen is in advanced negotiations to transform its Osnabrück vehicle plant into a production hub for the Iron Dome missile defense system. Yes, you heard that right. This is Volkswagen. History is repeating itself. And then you've got this alliance with, of all nations, Israel. Israel just handing over all of its technology for the Iron Dome. Here you go, Germany. You're well. And then Volkswagen, for its part, yeah, we'll stop producing cars over at this plant and we'll start producing weapons. Does that sound familiar? Even someone on Twitter said, last time German industry suspended industry on, you know, machines, cars, whatever, and started making weapons of war, it didn't end so well. And here we are doing it again. And nobody bats an eye, as you would expect. And the Daily Wire seems almost excited about it, too. That's a conservative site. Says, while the Iran conflict has sparked intense debate within the German halls of power, most notably from Steinmeier, quoting Steinmeier, the Volkswagen-Rafael tie-up signals a more pragmatic, security-first approach from Chancellor Friedrich Merz's government. Well, there's differences between Steinmeier and Merz, but, you know, one thing they all agree upon. Let's start building a new, very modern German war machine. And hey, we've got unlimited spending. I mean, we had a clip on the docket last week or week before where Donald Trump was bragging about, look, I was insisting they pay their fair share, 5% going toward the NATO budget. And they're all doing it. This is a success. Europe is ramping up defense spending. Germany leading the way. This is seen as a positive development. It's pretty amazing to see all of this coming together and so quickly. Ezekiel 23 says that God is going to raise up our lovers. And every once in a while, they don't even talk like they love us. Not Steinmeier anyway. They don't even speak as if we're a strong alliance. The U.S. and Germany, I mean. But God says, look, I'm going to raise them up and I'm going to use them to correct my people Israel, to correct the people of Israel. This Daily Wire piece says, for Israel, the deal is a testament to the enduring strength. What is little Israel thinking? What is Judah thinking? It's a testament to the enduring strength of the Berlin-Jerusalem alliance. Rafael officials noted that Germany was chosen specifically for its status as one of Israel's most reliable partners. I mean, the prophetic implications of this, it's just immense. They're all over the place. America's departure from the Middle East, the severing of the alliance between America and little Judah, Judah reaching out to lovers for help, for protection, Germany building its war machine, and of course leading that seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. You could play that clip. I think it's number 9, the one we always play from Herbert Armstrong on that point.
And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
That's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing the beating heart. And it's beating strongly. The Holy Roman Empire's beating heart, it's in Germany. The Daily Wire says here, by choosing to produce the Iron Dome, a system credited with a 90% success rate in saving civilian lives, Volkswagen is not just saving a factory, it's participating in a vital effort to safeguard the democratic world. The Daily Wire thinks this is a great idea. It's unbelievable. Yeah, this is a great idea. You see the ignorance of history. I just read through a list of all the Iranian-backed attacks on America that goes back 47 years. And it doesn't matter. Listen, we've got a 15-point plan. And furthermore, the effort these past 3 weeks, I mean, the German president doesn't like it. He says it's illegal. And there's plenty of critics right here at home as well. And so as the world, as the Western world, as the Israelite-led world, cheers on Germany rebuilding its military machine. Well, we're seeing prophecy after prophecy after prophecy coming into alignment. Jesus told us to watch world events and to pray always so that we know. So that we know how close we are. You can, I mean, I was thinking this morning too, you can see all the more clearly too, just how unique the message coming from this program and the Key of David and the Trumpet website and the Trumpet magazine, you can see how much more this voice is going to be standing out. Not for the right reasons, the way the world views it, but because it's a message that will be rejected and despised, this Trumpet issue. February 2026, right here, you see the cover? It's a cover that shows all the covers in the past that we've had Germany featured. Decades of warnings about Germany. It's just gone on for decades. And the world hasn't listened. The world's been asleep. This was my father's program. Last year, about a year ago, Germany is preparing for World War III, clip 4.
Toward the end of World War II in August 1944, representatives of massive German companies like Krupp, Messerschmitt, Volkswagen Werk, and Rheinmetall met with senior Nazis at the so-called Red House meeting. A U.S. intelligence document declassified in 1996 says that these business leaders were told they must prepare themselves to finance the Nazi Party, which would be forced to go underground. That was what they were saying just before the end of World War II. They were ready to build it up again. They never stop. And by 1944, already planning for the next round, existing financial reserves in foreign countries must be placed at the disposal of the party so that a strong German empire can be created after the defeat, or after the defeat of World War II. They went underground and began to build another empire to start another war, World War III, and they're about ready to start it right now. What do you think about that? That's prophesied in many prophecies in your own Bible.
How about that? German industry working together with Germany's military, Germany's government. Straight out of the pages of the history books. And we've said for years that the business leaders in Germany, that's where so much of the decision-making about this now-forming empire are made. My father wrote back in March 2022, Donald Tusk called Angela Merkel's public support of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline her biggest mistake. Ms. Merkel has consistently defended the controversial gas pipeline in the face of intense opposition from the U.S. and Germany's EU allies. But Tusk claimed she had told him privately that she had no choice because of the pressure she was under from German business leaders. You see, the German business leaders wanted this. And I've got other clips and articles about just how powerful German industry is. It's manufacturing economy, more so than even other nations. Just the percentage of the economy overall. So this is not a minor story when Volkswagen, I mean, German car makers now shifting their factory focus, at least in the case of this one factory, to weapons of war. It says here, German business leaders had enough power to overrule the chancellor. The people may vote for one thing. This is my father writing in 2022. But if business leaders want something else, they win. This article, Rising from the German Underground, it's 4 years old now, March 2022. And my father goes back and looks at history. When German business leaders, as you just heard there in that clip, they conspired to preserve the German Empire after World War II. They just went underground and declassified documents. Prove it. This is history. This is not fantasy. This is not make-believe. And now you're seeing all these headlines where business leaders, they're back at center stage, aren't they? And now the factories are switching over. Well, you got to do it because look at Orange Hitler. I mean, he's so cruel. He's breaking so many international laws. The war itself is a violation of international law, says the president of Germany. My father says in this article, it says, from 1933 on, Germany was a fascist dictatorship under Hitler, yet under each regime, the same men ruled in Germany. Behind each political facade, the reins of power were held by a small group of not more than a few thousand military leaders, industrialists, junkers, and scientific experts who constitute the German General Staff. It says the General Staff is the real permanent government of Germany, not only controlling Germany's military affairs, but also the German economy, technology, schools, universities, politics. And then my father says, this is why Ms. Merkel's disclosure should shake the world. The real power in Germany lies with the same people who pushed Germany to World War twice before. And it's as if the whole world has forgotten this. We've certainly forgotten it here in America. And here history is repeating itself. And what do you get on all the commentary, on the whole circuit? You get crickets. You get silence. You get nothing. No, actually, what you do get are people like Steinmeier saying, It's America's the problem here. And opinion polls back those up, the statements of those leaders. They don't trust Trump. They trust Putin more than Trump. And meanwhile, the war machine, it's in motion. And the German industrialists, they're behind it. They're supporting it. They're helping it. Going back to that program, this is from my father on the Key of David. It says 92. Is it that maybe the date is wrong. We'll see in a second. Clip 5.
The German military machine shows no pity. It didn't in World War II, did it? It is in his heart to destroy, Isaiah says. It's like, well, that's the way it's been done throughout history. When they get into their military machine. The Germans have a long history as intense military destroyers. Any historian can tell you that.
Well, there you go. 1992 it is. 30-some years ago. The message, like the Trumpet magazine has on its cover, it goes back decades. And here he's pointing out something that, as he said there, any historian can tell you, should be able to tell you. Well, it seems like the good historians are gone today as well. You can't get good historians, good commentators. It's just like the Bible says in so many places that when the alarm sounds, I mean, we're going to be fast asleep, caught by total surprise. We will conclude this segment. We'll go to, just to give the guys in a control room a heads up, we'll go to a short promotional break. And then when we come back, we'll finish today's show with the segment prepared by Sam Livingston regarding this attempt to make a deal with the Islamic regime. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States.
Hoorah!
One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe. And it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The leaders are all gone. Nobody knows who to talk to. But we're actually talking to the right people, and they want to make a deal so badly. You have no idea how badly they want to make a deal. And we'll see what happens. Yeah, well, we're in negotiations, as it turned out. And now you've seen what I said yesterday was exactly correct. We're in negotiations right now. They're doing it along with Marco, JD. We have a number of people doing it. And the other side, I can tell you, they'd like to make a deal.
Trump says that the United States is in negotiations with Iran. In the midst of all of that, the United States is still sending the 82nd Airborne Division over to the Middle East, which many people say is an escalation. It does feel a lot like the lead up to the war, where President Trump wants to have talks, but then is sending all of the Navy into, well, not all of the Navy, but a good chunk of the U.S. Navy to surround Iran. Now, these negotiations, it is the fog of war. There's a lot of confusion over who is in charge of Iran, who they're actually negotiating with. The United States says that it sent this list of 15 conditions to Iran. They were sent through officials in Pakistan, and they gave them basically to the equivalent of the Iran's Speaker of the House. And there's a 24-hour ultimatum to agree to these terms and conditions. Now, Iran has already said, we're not in direct talks. And then it was just reported today that Iran has already rejected this deal. You have to wonder why Iran doesn't just simply say yes. They're known for lying. You'd think that they would want to buy some time by just agreeing to anything. But that shows that they aren't desperate to end this war. It shows that the United States is actually the one that is desperate to end this war. Perhaps the Iran sees that Trump wants this deal more than they do. They see that they still have a lot of power domestically within Iran, that it's hard to weed them out. They know that the West doesn't have the will to go in and confront them. So they just have to wait this out. And not agreeing to this deal, again, it just makes President Trump, it makes the United States look bad in the eyes of the rest of the world, because the longer this goes on, the more the oil prices are driven up. Eventually, that's going to trickle over to impacting China and the goods that they produce, and energy prices everywhere leads to prices going up everywhere else. So President Trump essentially has to wage a perfect war in order to please everybody, and Iran just has to survive. So President Trump looks like the desperate party here in trying to make this deal. At any rate, according to the Times of Israel, Trump's team, they've sent over this list of 15 conditions. Like I mentioned, Iran has already said they're not agreeing to this, but I want to talk about just what this says about the United States' position. This is Witkoff's plan, it's Kushner's plan, it's J.D. Vance's plan. Apparently Marco Rubio is in the mix there as well. But whatever the details about how these negotiations are playing out, we know what at least 14 of these 15 points are. I'm not sure why they haven't revealed what the 15th point is. But there are a few takeaways just from what's on that list and what it says about the United States. The first point is that it makes America look desperate. If the enemy is being beaten and they're absolutely desperate and they're cleaving to whatever they can to survive, they would be the ones that want to surrender and make a deal. But here you've got the United States looking desperate, the United States wanting to make a deal no matter what. Well, I mean, there are those conditions there, but who knows, you know, what the United States is going to be willing to overlook in order to just get a deal, as they've done in times past. America is looking desperate, and they wouldn't finish the job in Iran. This would be catastrophic, as we've covered on this show, if they don't finish the job, if the regime is left intact. And this shows that Iran can basically use oil prices as leverage. That's pretty much the weapon that they have that's making President Trump behave so desperately. This is an article Melanie Phillips wrote just a couple weeks ago titled "Holding Our Nerve." She says, "So is Trump winding the war down or ramping it up? Maybe he was suggesting a speedy end to the war merely to get the oil price down again and fast. Who knows?" And that has been happening a lot. A lot of people have accused him of market manipulation, you know, just saying, well, we're in talks to put the markets at ease. And then Iran comes out and says, we're not talking. Trump is just saying this. And you do have people on the left now saying, well, they believe the Iranians more than the Americans. Now, there's all sorts of tactics that go on here. And who knows all of those little details and those nuances. But the big picture here is that this list was published and made available for the world to see. And it's those conditions are not far off from what Barack Obama put in place with the JCPOA. Some of them are actually more liberal or more promising for Iran. Melanie says, but if he ends the war prematurely, the regime survives. And if that happens because of the oil price, then America, Britain, and the world will be held hostage by Iran repeatedly deploying that oil weapon to make itself invulnerable as it develops its nuclear weapons and creates a ballistic missile system so enormous that no one will be able to prevent it from pursuing its infernal goal to destroy the West. I'll get into those conditions in a few minutes, but one of them is that Iran is allowed to have missiles. And then it says they're only allowed to use them for defensive purposes, which is exactly what Iran has always said about their missile program. Phillips says, but the idea that a negotiated compromise with the regime is even possible, let alone desirable, is yet another example of Western myopia and wishful thinking, a luxury not available to those at the sharp end of Tehran's psychopathic aggression. So it makes America look desperate. It's a victory. Any deal is a victory for the Iranian regime as long as they survive. And President Trump said, well, unconditional surrender. That's the second takeaway from just looking at this list. This is not unconditional surrender. If Iran did agree, even if they just said, yes, this is not unconditional surrender. They survived. The enemy lives. That regime stays intact. And actually, they have a path that leads them to being more prosperous than ever before. Here's a clip of Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, talking about that phrase, unconditional surrender.
The president said recently there will be no deal with Iran except unconditional surrender. Mm-hmm. What does that look like, unconditional surrender? How will you know it's real?
It means we're fighting to win. It means we set the terms. We'll know when they're not capable of fighting.
We'll know when they're not capable of fighting. We set the terms. And again, even that explanation was pretty vague. They're defeated. They're done. It's pretty obvious when Japan and Germany surrendered. President Trump said there will be no deal with Iran except unconditional surrender. That was on March 6th. After that and the selection of a great and acceptable leader, we and many of our wonderful and very brave allies and partners will work tirelessly to bring Iran back from the brink of destruction, making it economically bigger, better, and stronger than ever before. And this is a mistake that the United States made after World War II as well. That wasn't total victory. They helped rebuild the enemy, and they thought, well, they'll be a great ally now. And we see these allies, these lovers, turning against the United States. Anything that leaves the Iran regime intact is failure. This isn't what unconditional surrender looks like. And at the very best that they could hope for now is you basically get back into the situation that Israel has been in with Hamas and Gaza or any of its neighbors. And that's, well, you just monitor the situation, and every couple of years you have to go in and bomb them. And I guess that's what President Trump is fine with Iran doing. But that approach, again, leads to October 7 style attacks. They're allowed to survive. They're allowed to plan their next assault. President Trump, this is an article from Mr. Gerald Fleury titled, President Trump Betrayed Israel. And he's quoting Melanie Phillips. And Phillips says, Trump doesn't want a war on his watch. He has virtually promised the American people that he will bring an end to war, but sometimes an enemy arises with whom any agreement is a deal with the devil. Mr. Fleury says, absolutely right. This world is full of grave dangers. Sometimes you must fight or else be taken captive or destroyed by evil people. In this agreement, Phillips wrote, President Trump is dealing with the devil. You can surely say it's not of God's doing. This is a catastrophic, monumental mistake. And that was talking about, I think, going back to the deals that Trump was making with Hamas. And basically, that gets back to making a deal with Iran. A subpoint here is that there's also this break with Netanyahu. There are reports that the United States did alert Jerusalem, at least that, you know, these negotiations were going to start and here are our terms. But it doesn't sound like Israel was involved in coming up with or contributing to what those terms were. So now it's the United States and Iran, Israel sidelined, and has to deal with whatever comes of that. And this is not a deal that benefits Israel. The Times of Israel says the scenario of a rapid ambiguous agreement in principle is giving Israel's political and security leaders sleepless nights, Channel 12 reported, because it risks a situation in which the Iranians would essentially have emerged with the upper hand, with the conflict ending before the precise terms are agreed. Now, like I said, there are a lot of details that go into whatever these negotiations are, who's talking, who's in charge of Iran. But nonetheless, the United States published this list, or at least was given to reporters, so that we can see some of these points. And the existence of this list is shameful. It's another deal. Like I said, we just have 14 of the 15 points. I'll go through these. The first point is Iran must dismantle its existing nuclear capabilities. Point two, Iran must commit never to pursue nuclear weapons. Number three, there will be no uranium enrichment on Iranian territory. Four, Iran must hand its stockpile of some 450 kilograms of uranium enriched to 60% to the IAEA in the near future in a timetable to be agreed. Five, the Natanz, Isfahan, and Fordo nuclear facilities must be dismantled. Six, the IAEA, the UN's nuclear watchdog, must be granted full access, transparency, and oversight inside Iran. That was a big point in the JCPOA, and it was just so easy to hide things from them as well. Seven, Iran must abandon its regional proxy paradigm. Eight, Iran must cease the funding, direction, and arming of its regional proxies. Number nine, the Strait of Hormuz must remain open and function as a free maritime corridor. 10, Iran's missile program must be limited in both range and quantity, with specific thresholds to be determined at a later stage. 11, any future use of missiles would be restricted to self-defense. So they're allowed to have these missiles, which was one of the points that was why we were so urgent about attacking Iran in the last couple of weeks, because they were at this breakout point, essentially, where they were producing so many of them that it would outmatch the number of missiles we had to defend against them, basically making them unstoppable. But now we're saying, well, you can go back to production of those missiles. And then look at what it says here. In return, Iran would benefit as follows. Point 12, Iran would receive a full lifting of sanctions imposed by the international community. So welcome back onto the world stage. 13, the U.S. would assist Iran in advancing its civilian nuclear program, including electricity generation at the Bashar nuclear plant. I mean, that's just crazy that we would go and actually help them rebuild, just like following World War II, build the enemy back up, and giving them nuclear power, giving them, again, a pretty easy pathway to get to nuclear weapons. Number 14, the so-called snapback mechanism, which allows for the automatic reimposition of sanctions if Iran fails to comply, would be removed. I don't even understand why that would be in there. Basically, you can violate the rules and the sanctions aren't even going to come back into place. I guess maybe if they hold the threat of just bombing them whenever it happens, that's supposed to replace that. But why even put these things in here? Allowed to have missiles, allowed to have a nuclear program. Again, it's not that far off from Obama's deal. And what is it all based on? Iran, the regime hasn't changed. There's no repentance there. There isn't this humility and change of heart with the regime that would make it logical to have these sorts of conditions. It's not unconditional surrender. This basically allows Iran to be a free nation without changing. They're terrorists, the IRGC, allowed to survive. The third takeaway is that America is in the midst of an exodus from the Middle East. You can see it in how desperate the United States is to get out, to end this as quickly as possible, to hand off responsibility to someone else. The United States, they're not mentioned in a lot of these major end time conflicts like in Daniel 11 and verse 40. It's the King of the North. It's the Holy Roman Empire that's involved. And you look at the curses in Leviticus 26 that afflict the end time nations of Israel, particularly the United States and Britain, and they don't have pride in their power. Their strength is spent in vain. America wants out. Israel knows it. Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, they know it. Everybody knows America is desperate to get out. And that's why America comes to the negotiating table from this position of desperation, which gives Iran the upper hand. I wanted to end with this quote from an author at the Jerusalem Post. He published this back in February. It's titled, "Trump Must Not Negotiate with Iran Unless the Regime First Meets Strict Preconditions." He writes, "The world is focused on a single question." Well, this is back to, will the United States intervene or will we just negotiate? And he says, "Recent tweets, media leaks, and comments attributed to close sources have raised concern that confrontational rhetoric may be giving way to the language of talks. That would be a grave mistake. Cutting a deal with this regime would be nothing less than geopolitical malpractice." America looks weak. America is giving up to Iran, giving up to that evil regime. If you haven't, go back and read that article from the March Philadelphia Trumpet, March 2025. Titled "President Trump Betrayed Israel." It gives a good overview. It gives you good context about how President Trump approaches all of these details and what's eventually leading to this betrayal of Netanyahu or this betrayal of Israel. If you haven't read that, I encourage you to go back and read that. Thank you for listening to this segment on this, the latest developments of these back and forth negotiations between the United States and Iran.